WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yep, it's another Monday Night Talk. We have the power on here at the Broadcast House. I'm sure there are many folks who are driving home at this moment who cannot say the same. I can say that I don't have any power in regards to Eversource, but luckily I invested in a generator a couple of years ago when we had the big hurricane that came through during the summertime, and it has been paying dividends ever since. Ben is my producer this evening. Ben, do you have power on?
Right now, we do have power, thankfully. We had one overnight in South Weymouth that we did not have power. I still feel for everybody that does. My sister in Pembroke just got power back earlier today. My parents in Abington late yesterday. Still a struggle out there, Kev.
Yeah, so if you are sitting at home, hopefully you have the radio set to 95.9 WATD. We'll do our best to keep you entertained and informed with tonight's program. We start things off after the traffic. We have Sabrina Singh. She is the Deputy Communications Director for the Democratic National Committee. We'll chat a little bit about their new initiative, I Will Vote, targeting you. Yes, you and you and you and you, and up to about 50 million voters. And the idea is to try to mobilize these folks for the upcoming elections later on this year, November. And I would think that it would be even a little bit longer termed than that, probably 2020. Kind of a smart thing, right? So we'll look forward to talking to Sabrina. And then at about 6:35, like we did last week, we had a couple of candidates running for selectmen. Same type of thing today, tonight. And that is we have Kingston selectman candidate Tammy Murray and Hanson selectman candidate Joe Weeks. I might put a little bit of a modification. Joe, you've heard on this program previously. He's sat in as my co-host, and not to say that he wouldn't be doing future co-host duties, because Joe did a phenomenal job last time he was here in studio. And I don't think this is Joe's first run for selectman. This might be it's a second time around. So we'll talk with Tammy and Joe. And get an insight into why they're running for office and, again, help inform you, the voter. Then the 7 o'clock hour is interesting. Are you a fan of shows like Ancient Aliens that you see on the History Channel? Are you somebody who kind of questions, are we alone? Well, I have Caroline Corey. Caroline, of course, she's been on that show as an expert, the Ancient Aliens, and she also has put out, produced, and directed an award-winning film called E.T. Contact. They Are Here. She's also been an author of a couple of different books as well. We're going to talk to her about this movie, and she's going to help answer with some of her research, If We Are Alone. Pretty cool, huh? Then, to close things out, we got WATD's own Brendan Conley, who is a sports reporter. He's also a host. You hear him. You heard him here last night as part of the Sports Exchange with Bill Wilhelm. Well, I thought I'd drag Brendan in And we're going to chat a little bit about the Red Sox, the Patriots, and two teams that I wasn't expecting much from at the beginning of the year, the Celtics and the Bruins. Bruins are on a phenomenal run. It almost feels like it's 2010, 2011. Because Ben's going to chime in here real quick because he's kind of a hockey guy.
Oh, yeah, Ben's going to chime in real quick. And it definitely feels like another cup run year. And if you heard the Sports Exchange last night with Brendan Connolly and company, myself, I was also there.
Yeah.
Rick Nash.
Hey, listen.
Rick
Nash. Give yourself a little bit of a plug there. I know you don't do that often.
Plug. Sports okay. Exchange. Catch Benjamin Fumbles.
Yeah, let's see what happens with Rick Nash. But if they bow out in the second round, no crocodile tears from you.
Oh, no, you wouldn't get any anyway, trust me. You got it.
Again, I think right now we get the young talent going out and getting the Rick Nash and signing Brian Gionta.
Former Habs captain, by the way. First time that's happened since the 30s.
Yes, and he just got his AARP card as well.
He did. He did.
Let's see what happens with that. No, he's actually 39 years old, but he actually hadn't been signed, but he was with the Team USA, who they were kind of on the outside. They were on the cusp of trying for a medal. Just couldn't get past the Czech Republic.
Yep, or Team Germany, or pretty much anybody else.
Yeah, anybody else. Or, yeah, the OAR, the Olympic Athletes of Russia. I actually thought it was a band myself, but...
Nope, that was a real deal, and they took it home.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. I'm really striving to be the best smoke shop on the South Shore and South Coast in Massachusetts. If I'm not meeting that expectation, please let me know. And you can do so by private messaging me on Brennan's Smoke Shop's Facebook page. The second you press send, it pops up on my smartphone and I will respond to you immediately. If we ran out of your product, you want to order a product, message me on Facebook. If there's anything our employees could do better, please message me on Facebook. If there's an employee that's gone above and beyond your expectations, please message me on Facebook. Honestly, I feel really good about the people that I have working for my company. If we can be better, let me know. Message me on Brennan Smoke Shop's Facebook page. Brennan Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now on Pope's Island, New Bedford. If you're not happy, you want to talk, or you want to complain to somebody, message me directly on Brennan Smoke Shop's Facebook page.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
So, you're going to hear many, many individuals who are coming on, as I mentioned. Coming up, Kingston Selectman candidate Tammy Murray and Hanson Selectman candidate Joe Weeks. Now, those are races that there's not a party affiliation, but we get state races going on. We got folks running for Congress. We got folks running for U.S. Senate here in Massachusetts. And I'm pretty sure that my next guest is going to tell us that the initiative that has been launched as of the past couple of days by the Democratic National Committee, this initiative called I Will Vote, will be something that will be to help get about 50 million voters to get out there. We have joining us right now, she is the Democratic National Committee's Communication Director, Deputy Communication Director, Sabrina Singh, is joining us. Sabrina, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for joining us. And this is very interesting. We here at 95.9 WATD like to discuss politics, things that are going on, things that are going to, be effective when it comes to our local leadership, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican or somebody who's unenrolled. But I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit about the new campaign. Again, as I said, I Will Vote. And the idea is to target 50 million voters. If you could, kind of give us the initiatives that are going to be used to reach those prospective voters.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I Will Vote is our new campaign that the DNC just launched last week. We have four pillars to the campaign. So committing to vote, registering people to vote, voter protection, which is obviously very important, especially with the Trump administration and their sham voter fraud committee that actually, I think, just disbanded in the last few weeks, and then get out the vote. And so the DNC under Tom Perez believe there are no more off years. And, you know, we are going to be campaigning and organizing and mobilizing early. So that means that we are going to be in your state and in your district starting now. And we've launched this brand new ambitious initiative to reach 50 million Americans between now and November to get them to commit to vote for Democrats up and down the ticket. It is, you know, we know that it is that your voice matters. Democrats want to make your voice heard. And so we launched this new initiative to do just that. And we're really excited about it. I mean, to reach 50 million Americans, that is going to be, that's going to take a lot of hard work. And we have our allies and groups across the country that are dedicated and working with us to make sure we get out the vote.
Is this more of a marathon than a sprint? You're not just eyeballing the midterm elections, that you're maybe looking at the 2020 elections and the 2024 elections?
It is about organizing from now until 2020 and beyond. We at the DNC were always a committee that was focused on the presidency and electing a new leader, or being focused every 4 years. That changed under Tom when he became chair of the DNC. So we are planting the roots for 2018, 2019, and beyond in 2020. Massachusetts is going to be a very important battleground state, not just in 2018, but in 2020. And so we have to make sure that voters know who's on the ticket, where to vote, where the polling place is, and that they make a plan to vote. Things come up in life. You might decide that you're going to go vote at 8 a.m. and your daughter gets sick and you have to stay home with her. That's okay. Make a plan to vote, that evening, or make sure that you know where your polling place is so you know to make a plan when you leave work. It is so important that, people are engaged. I think in 2014, we saw the lowest voter turnout in history since World War II. I mean, that's unacceptable. We have to do a better job of engaging with our folks and making sure that they know that elections matter. And I think 2016 showed us just that.
Well, it sounds to me you basically touched on my next question. That is voter apathy. What initiative do you have as part of this campaign that will deal with voter apathy and try to spell out how important one person's vote can be?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, we believe that the key to that is organizing early and organizing now. We know that people were turned off in 2016 by certain candidates or messages that they heard. We don't believe in leaving any community behind, which is why we actually launched one of our new initiatives is Every Zip Code Counts. We want to make sure that we are in your communities. We are engaging with you now. Democrats, I think in particular, want to bring all voices into our party. We believe that, if you are upset about, the infrastructure bill that the administration proposed, or, the massive tax cuts that are going to benefit, the top 1% in your state, we want your voice heard. Or if it's something else. If you're upset about, something in your state at the local level, the only way to make an impact is to vote and to change your representation. And so we believe that the best way to do that is to make sure people know when to vote and to organize early in your state.
Again, we're speaking with Sabrina Singh. She is the Deputy Communications Director for the Democratic National Committee, and we're talking a little bit about their new campaign that they launched last week, I Will Vote, hoping to target you and you and you and another, 49 million and change, 50 million to be exact, to get out and to vote. When you're talking about initiatives here, you're really looking to all ages, the demographic. It doesn't matter if it's somebody who's a voter in their 50s or 60s to maybe the younger folks who are in high school and forming like a Democratic club.
Exactly. And I think, you know, what we've seen with just the horrific shooting that happened, I think now 2 or 3 weeks ago at the school in Florida, you know, we are seeing youth more engaged than ever. And these are our next generation leaders. These are the faces and the new leaders of our party. And these are first-time voters. And so whether you have voted in every election and every midterm and every special election, you know, that is great. We want to keep you engaged. We want to bring you into the Democratic Party. We want to make sure that you vote in November. If it's your first time voting and you are 18 years old, first thing you need to do is get registered. If you are going to college in the fall, your location of where you vote is going to change. And so it's really important that you go to iwillvote.com to check your registration, to make sure that you are, in fact, registered. And then, you know, make your voice heard. I think that we are seeing engagement that we have never seen before, and it is on us as a Democratic Party to harness the energy from the women's marches to, you know, the March for Our Lives that's happening on March 24th, that we are going to be out there and reaching the ambitious goal of 50 million Americans and registering new folks to vote, but also those who have, you know, voted time and again, committing that they vote for Democrats in November.
Let's say somebody wants to get involved. Are you looking for volunteers or just folks to get out and vote and be active in that manner?
Oh, absolutely. We are always looking for volunteers. There's never a shortage. We love people to come volunteer with us at the DNC or, you know, with your local state Democratic Party. We always need more people to be sending text messages out, reminding folks when their election is, where the polling place is, making phone calls, knocking doors. These are the best ways to get involved. So you can get involved with your Massachusetts Democratic Party. You can get involved with the DNC at democrats.org. or go to iwillvote.com and also get involved that way. There's never too many volunteers. So if you want to make a difference and, you know, you're ready to register and vote, but you can't wait until November, please let us know. We would love your help. And we need people from now until November engaged and, spreading the word in their communities.
The thing I do have to ask, and while this is a great initiative to at least get prospective voters to register and be available to vote for any different election, whether it's, you know, for whether it's someone running for Congress, a U.S. Senate, to someone who's, you know, engaged in a statewide race. What part of what the DNC is doing also is stretching out to getting candidates that voters are going to get excited about? I have to say this. When you look at the 2016 election, I don't know if either party was excited about the candidates that they had. While Hillary Rodham Clinton was, you know, a big name, I don't feel that people were excited by her presence and her campaign. What needs to be done, what is being done by the DNC to find candidates that folk that are going to attract the voters?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I think candidates really need to reflect their state and their communities and their constituents. I think the best way that the DNC is getting involved is, you know, we're talking to everyone. We're talking to people that want to run. And if you want to run, we are, you know, asking that you definitely do that and you reach out to groups, whether it's Emily's List or Run for Something or, you know, the respective campaign committees. But we believe the more voices, the better. So the DNC is actively encouraging people to run. I think when Tom travels around the country, if he hears that someone's interested in running for your local school board, to the U.S. Senate, you should do it. And, you know, we you know, we firmly believe that every district right now and every state is in play. We saw this coming in 2017 and ending the year with two gubernatorial wins in Virginia and New Jersey. I mean, we flipped an Alabama Senate seat to blue. So, you know, you shouldn't be intimidated by if you, quote, like, live in a red state or in a red district. You should run. And that's what the DNC is trying to do. We're trying to encourage that. We're trying to encourage more voices out there. We believe that's important to have diversity in our party. And, you know, I think it's great if you do want to get involved, you should also contact your local state party. They are the eyes and ears on the ground. They know more than the DNC does about your own state. And so it is important that if you want to get involved, reach out to them and tell them that you're interested, and they will connect you with the right, organization to help you set up your campaign. And, you know, the DNC will always support the Democratic nominee that emerges from any primary. And, you know, we're really excited about this November and hopefully flipping some more red seats to blue.
Sabrina Singh has been our guest, Deputy Communications Director for the DNC. Anything I haven't asked you, Sabrina, but you feel is important to at least reaching our listeners?
Yeah, I think... I think you asked me, but I think just to leave on the note that, your engagement really does matter. I think 2016 showed us that being complacent or sitting at home or thinking, you know, everyone's going to vote one way or the other, why does my vote really matter? It does matter. It really, really does matter. I can't emphasize that enough, and I think that, you know, we have very big and important challenge in front of us and a big opportunity to change the direction that our country is going right now. And so if you want to get involved, you know, visit our website, follow the candidates that are running in your state and just stay engaged, stay involved with us, and make sure you go to iwillvote.com.
Excellent. Well, listen, we want to thank you, Sabrina, for being our guest.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll look forward to speaking with the DNC in the near future.
I hope so. Thanks. Have a great night.
You got it. There she is. Sabrina Singh with the Democratic National Committee as they've launched their campaign, I Will Vote. Unprecedented new campaign with four different initiatives to try to reach voters and somehow target 50 million Americans, get them to be involved with not only the big races like the presidential races, but even on the local level, state level. We will step aside, and when we come back, we have sitting before me right now, two candidates are running for local office. Oh, who knew? When we come back, more Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
So, as we told you at the top of the program, very similar to last week, where instead of having like one candidate in at a time, the idea is to have like-minded candidates. I was going to add one candidate who actually has been in office for 1 year, but that individual couldn't make it in. So what's good is the two candidates that are sitting before me. We have Tammy Murray, who is running for selectman in Kingston, and Joe Weeks, running for selectman in the town of Hanson. Is both of them aren't in office, so to speak, for the office that they're running for. They're not seeking re-election. So we're going to get to know them a little bit and find out why they're running, the appeal, how much they love town meeting, whether they've had problems with local restaurants putting whipped cream on, desserts. When you didn't want it. No, I'm kidding. But we have Tammy Murray.
Hi.
Tammy is no stranger. Tammy, like Joe, and that's the other thing, is a commonality here. Hmm. Both of you have co-hosted this program.
That's really cool.
I did not know that.
Yes. Put that right in front of you.
Very nice.
Yeah, and you know what? Did you see the little light go on? Mm. It dawned on me. Like, oh, that's right. They both have co-hosted this program. It's pretty cool. Tammy, of course, formerly the COA director in the town of Kingston, mm-hmm. now has shifted her talents north up in Hanover. How's it doing up in Hanover?
Oh, it's awesome. It is absolutely awesome.
But now, not too long ago, and I'm always looking on social media. And I think that's where I draw all these decent conversations. Is I saw that you had pulled papers, Tammy. And then Joe, I actually went to because of another media gig that I do. I got to kind of check on one of two towns that I serve to see who the horses are going to be in the race. I happen to see your name. I'm like, I've had Joe on the show before.
That's right.
And Joe has been a worthy candidate and somebody who actually you hold a couple positions. You are chair of the planning board.
Yep.
And you do something with the elderly housing housing?
Chairman of the Housing Authority.
Of the Housing Authority.
And I'm on the Capital Improvement Committee.
Okay, nobody likes to show off, Joe.
I know.
Now, is this your first run for office?
It's my second. I should mention that I'm chair on the Wage and Personnel Board.
There you go.
Oh, but, I love it. See that?
But I ran 5 years ago, just before I got my job at the Council on Aging. So I was a total newcomer then.
Okay. So, Joe, why are you, I know 3 years ago, was it 3 years ago? 2 years
3 years ago.
Yeah, 3 years ago, Joe threw his hat in the ring and said, I want to be a selectman.
Yeah, wanted to give it a shot. I just got on some boards, and there were some projects that I wanted to be a part of, and mm-hmm. I just felt it was a good time to put my hat in the ring and see what happened.
Okay.
And, the rest is history.
How about you? Why are you saying, I want to be a selectman or a select person?
This time?
Select woman? Yeah.
Okay. Well, this time I think I have more experience in the whole town meeting thing. I worked for the town, which a lot of people haven't, so they don't see both sides all the time. Mm. So I think it's an important piece that you bring to the table when you have that kind of inside knowledge.
Talk to me about attending your respective town meetings. Myself as a reporter, for me, it's not only educational, but it also can be entertainment, depending on what the particular article is on the warrant and the passion that is brought out by folks, depending on what it is. Tammy?
Yeah, well, for many years, I just watched it on TV when my kids were smaller.
That's no fun.
I know, it really wasn't. And it wasn't until I really started attending and being involved in it that my passion for it just grew. But we've had some funny ones. I always refer to the rooster vote that took like an hour and a half. It was 11 o'clock at night. It was like one of my favorite town meetings.
For folks who don't know, folks who are in Plimpton or Norwell, like rooster vote, what is that? what was it, a bylaw?
Yeah, they were changing a bylaw to put standards around how many roosters or when you can have a rooster out and all that kind of stuff.
Was it like a problem with like unruly roosters?
Yeah, I guess they start really early in the morning. None of my neighbors have a rooster, so I don't have
that
problem.
Kind of reminds me of a Friends episode.
Yeah.
She's going through some changes. So. So how did that vote go?
I believe we could still have roosters.
Really?
It was a few years ago, but yeah, it was a tough one.
What a relief.
Yes. The anxiety was getting you, wasn't it? You had to know the answer.
Joe, I'm sure you've seen your share of fun at Hanson Town Meetings.
Yeah. The town meeting is one of the reasons why I love Hanson so much. I mean, you get an idea of the passion behind the townspeople that you're with right there. I mean, we have pretty decent turnout. Sometimes it becomes difficult to find a quorum, but the people that do show up and that are there, including the ones that are on TV, but the ones that are there, are it makes it fun because you get to see the passion behind the people that are involved in the day-to-day operations. Hanson's a special place because everybody becomes so involved in just the day-to-day operations of the town that it shows on the floor. There's lively discussions. People are always talking. It's very rare when it's a quick one. I think we had a special town meeting
that it went 15 minutes.
Yeah, it didn't go long at all.
I had to double-check the number.
Yeah, we were all kind of looking at each other like, is this real? Right? Is this what's happening? And it was a great one. Lots of great discussion during that one as well. But Sean Keeley does a great job. He's the town moderator. He does a great job. And Charlie Mann before him did a great job with that, kind of keeping us on task, keeping us focused. But the participation is the one that keeps you coming. And plus, it's a great time to meet everybody. How often do you get to see, 100, 200 people at the same time? And you get to, shake hands and see people that you haven't seen in a while. So I enjoy them a lot. I really do.
Any memorable special town meeting, that particular article that you had either shaking your head or chuckling, oh, wow, I can't believe we're like really delving, we're really going down this road with this particular topic or issue?
I wish I had something that was kind of provocative or even funny. It was just
it have to be nothing.
I just wish I had something kind of fun to talk about. Not really. I mean, there's been ones where, you start, and I'm sure this is with every town meeting, but you start talking about something, and then next thing you know, you're talking about something else, and there's a debate on the floor that has nothing to do with what you were talking about, but we all just kind of went down the rabbit hole together as one big group.
Move the question.
Stuff like that. Yeah, you get that a lot. Move the question.
Move the question.
Move the question.
Football game's running in half hour.
That's right.
Can't have that. Each of you serving on your respective boards that you're on now, what do you feel that you've been able to learn serving on that board, conducting Robert Rules of Order, and being somebody who makes decisions for your key area of government? Tammy?
I joined Wage and Personnel probably a month after I left my town job in Kingston. It was passionate to me because something that a lot of the town employees went through was their salaries. So for me, it was really important to get on there and understand it more and see why, those were the salary ranges, et cetera. But you also find it's very difficult because, you know these people and you have to look at it as a position. So it's really interesting how you find yourself putting things into compartments so you don't have any bias or things aren't getting in the way of making a decision. And it's really kind of cool when at the end of the day, when you have a product to present, that you did it the best that you could.
Okay. Joe? In the three hats that you wear?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's really a lot that I've learned. One of the big things that I've learned is, and most important, is just the people that you come in contact with on a regular basis. So you learn the names, you learn the townspeople that come and sit in the meetings, and you get to build a relationship with those people. With the capital improvement, if you want to get specific to each kind of hat, the Capital Improvement Committee really oversees some of the long-term planning and sets priorities for the town. So I've been lucky enough to have a great chairman for a long time, when John Norton there, and he does a really good job of trying to help us prioritize and make sense of the monies that are allocated. And it gives me a good understanding of where the town really wants to go and how to present that in a meaningful, thoughtful, methodical way. So the Capital Improvement Committee has been great for that, so we can have some long-term planning. As far as the planning board, I mean, we can go on for days about this, but it taught me how to, work with, different developers, work within different subsystems, do overlay areas, project planning in the future, massive, massive bylaws changes and restructuring. We did one of those in the past.
40B, stuff like that?
40Bs, 40R. We got a couple of those coming down the pike right now, actually. New developments in general.
Oh boy.
Whenever I go to buy a house, just in general, or talk to friends about that, I know now what questions asked more specifically about, is it a private way or a public way, and what does that look like in terms of developments and condos and all that stuff.
When you're going to ask the town to, you know, accept this road.
Which is another thing that we're looking at on a little subcommittee, but the selectmen are doing that more so. So we learned all about that stuff. I could go on about that. We got complete streets things. We've got tip programs. All of that stuff. It was great. And then the housing authority, just, you know, working with Section 8, working with just trying to find, again, 40B, 40R type of things. Again, matrix planning, the people that are there, you know, just quality of life stuff. It's been a great run. It's been a lot of fun. I've learned a ton.
And it's also interesting where Hanson is kind of a bedroom community. The, you know, the amenities of having like a highway right there. It's not happening with Kingston. You got a, you know, you get a nice highway that kind of Route 3 goes right by, so it's appealing to folks. And you know, whether there's a mix of residential and commercial, how that works. I have to ask you both. What do you feel are the real issues? And it's early. You may not want to tip your hand too much for anybody else who's going to passing papers. And I also want to make this also this quick little commentary. Both of these candidates have, in fact, turned in their paperwork to their respective town halls. I want to avoid, you know, somebody who's just trying to get on to get a little bit of free press and knock somebody else. You know, make sure that we have folks in who are put their paperwork forward and they are going to be on the ballot come this spring. But what do you feel are some of the issues, prime issues, that are going to be discussed when you amongst the other candidates? Tammy?
There's some pretty big ones. We just currently had a library vote, which I know will come up, although I think we need to move forward from that and look at what they might present going forward and not what people thought, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. They're looking at building a new police station. I know that's not coming to town meeting this spring, but it will be coming up soon. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding and miscommunication. So clarity is really important to me. I know they talk about transparency a lot, but clarity makes more sense from where I'm coming from. Communication, things like that. Listening to the voters and understanding what they want is something that's been coming up a lot lately. And it's true. I think that there are people who are out of touch with what the community is really looking for, and I'm hoping to bring all that forward for them.
Joe.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of things. And I think that one of the things that we have to understand is that if you give me the microphone, I'm going to talk. So you got to give me the time for that. I know. You got to definitely put a stopwatch on me. So when we, you know, we're talking about just Hanson in general, there are some major things that are coming down the pike that are obvious now. And then there's some ones that are going to be coming down the pike that are going to be obvious later. They might be a couple months from now. They might be into the year from now, but they're coming down the pike. Some of those things would be, you know, we have the McQuan school closing, so we got to figure out what's going to happen with the restructuring of those kids, as well as the restructuring of those schools. And then once that happens, what's going to happen with the building itself? And now I know we have committees that were just created, but we still have to figure out what's going to happen with that. We still have the Plymouth County hospital site. Still got to figure out what's going on with that. We got a great board in the Kewaunee with the Kewaunee site.
Camp Kewaunee.
Camp Kewaunee.
We're gonna figure out what's going on. Rec Commission.
Yep. And they're doing a good job with that.
They did my homework.
Yeah, you know your stuff. Sounds like you've been around a little bit. We have
inside joke, folks.
Some stuff talking about the transfer station and what that's going to look like coming up. We got the complete streets thing, the tip programs. Those are going to have to do with, you know, kind of restructuring the lay of the land, trying to get sidewalks in, redo some of the streets, as well as those roundabouts with the tip programs, what that's going to look like. We still have to kind of resolve some of those things. But those are things that are going to be popping up, and along with the 40B and 40R stuff.
Why would you want a roundabout?
I don't know. I don't know.
Those things are a pain in the butt ski.
Yeah, there's one in Pembroke, actually, not far from my house.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. You live in the area. You know where it is.
Yeah. I'm not fond of it. There's also one in Duxbury, too.
Oh, yeah.
When you head to Kingston.
The Pembroke one gets me more than the one in Duxbury.
Does
I
it
think
because
really? It's newer. Mm-hmm. You don't expect it.
Okay. Yeah, it sneaks up on you.
It does.
It happens. It happens. It sneaks up in the snow for sure. But yeah, those are just some of them. I mean, we can keep talking about those for some of the issues that might be coming up for days. But there's lots of them.
What is your opinion of the town's, your individual town's financial structure? Because that's key. Being somebody who is on the Board of Selectmen, you're one of three, you're one of five, depending on the makeup of the board itself. You'll make key decisions in regards to the finances. You'll consult with your town's finance committee, and they'll tell you whether you got money for this and for that, and you know where you are when it comes Prop 2.5, the levy limit. Give me your take on where the picture stands, Tammy.
I think it's really important to get all the details on those situations before you speak to them, and I think at times that I've seen, there's always miscommunication, or there's something that someone on one board feels really passionate about and someone on another doesn't, and there doesn't always seem to be a level ground in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to understand those things. I know a lot of people don't understand the levy limits or don't understand what constitutes an override, or if you call it something different, it's still an
like
override.
Like a debt exclusion. You go, what?
Yeah.
This is the difference between
it's a lot of that. Yeah.
A Prop 2.5 override, and I don't want to sound redundant here, ladies and gentlemen who are listening at home, but a debt exclusion is something that, you know, it's on the books, but it goes away eventually. You know, it's just money that's assigned, whether it's like a capital project. Mm-hmm. You're going to build, you know, a new school or something, you do a debt exclusion, that comes off the book. You do a Prop 2.5 override, that's forever, unless, and it's rare, you vote an underride. And I don't know if there's any, is there one?
There was one town
that actually voted in the Commonwealth,
ago.
Right?
Yep.
An underride, where you vote under what you had voted prior.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Joe, same question to you.
I echo, you know, what you said. I think that you have to understand what's going on before you make decisions. You don't want to jump into them. I think that overall you want to get the best bang for your buck, but you also want to be responsible with the money. There's only a certain amount of dollars that can go into certain things, and there's a lot of people, especially in Hanson, that are on fixed incomes.
Yep.
And there are a lot of younger families with younger kids, and bills are not getting any smaller. So you have to be very responsible with the funds that are there, even though there's a massive necessity. So there's just different mechanisms that you would use. And the best idea is to just go in there and put all options on the table, make the best decision. You're surrounding yourself with people that are competent, that know what they're doing, mm-hmm. that can give you good advice, that could show you, you know, what you're looking to do. And it's just like anything you would do in a personal purchase. You want to make sure that you're planful and mindful of what's going on. So it's a very hard question to answer, but I guess the biggest thing is to just, you know, make sure you know what you're doing before you take the vote. That's mm-hmm. the biggest piece.
And again, we're speaking with Joe Weeks, who is running for Selectman in Hanson, and Tammy Murray, who is running for Selectman in Kingston. What are you going to do differently this time around as you campaign, each of you? What are you going to do differently to get out there and get the votes and get people to write your, you know, check off your box or whatever they do in the booth? Joe?
Well, I think it's all about the ground game, right? So it's, you know, getting out there, meeting people and doing what we do best, which is connecting with people, connecting with folks, getting the message out. I think the idea is to do as much door knocking and phone calls and get the word out there and let people know that you're actually running. You know, you'd be surprised. The idea is to get people to the polls, not just get people at the polls to vote for you, but get as many people there as possible, which is a great idea of what you brought in earlier with your first guest, is get more people out there voting. So I think that's the biggest one. The next thing is just, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You know, the idea is, you know, you're putting yourself out there for a reason. You have a certain level of expertise, and just be comfortable and let people know that you're genuine and you're there for them. I mean, and I hope that that's the message that I bring out in, with what I'm doing, which is, you know, my mind is set for the townspeople of Hanson. I'm in it for them, and I want that message to resonate. And we're going to go door to door and let everybody know.
Tammy.
Yeah, similarly, I want to make sure that I meet with enough people and listen to what their concerns are. And whether I can, you know, fix it or bring it to fruition or not, I want them to know I'm going to do everything in my power to get that done. I did a lot of phone calls and stuff last time, so that's on the agenda for sure. But maybe hanging out at the transfer station, that seems to work.
Okay. And Joe, I think you wanted to actually put out a public service announcement in regards to, for the folks who did not have power on the South Shore, anybody who might be on social media in regards to any spoilers?
Oh, yeah.
To last night's Walking
Dead
program.
Don't tell me what's going on with Walking Dead. I have no power, and hopefully I get it back tonight. I have no idea. but don't tell me.
But but you're past Carl passing away, right? Carl getting bit and dying.
Oh,
right?
Spoiler alert to the rest of the audience out there right now. Some people haven't seen it yet.
What's going to happen to Carl?
Yeah. No, nothing. Don't worry about it. Nothing. He's fine. Everything's good. Coral's fine.
As long as Coral's okay.
Coral's okay.
That's yes. It makes the show.
No one tell me a single thing.
Did Judith make it? I need to know.
Did they find my lost battle tank?
Yes, they did find that.
Oh, thank God.
Yes.
I want to thank you both for coming in. You are both welcome to stay for our next guest as we have, after our brief little break, top of the hour break, as you are listening to 95.9 WATD, World Wide Web, 95.9WATD.com, Caroline Corey. We're going to talk with her and learn whether extraterrestrial beings are here. You're welcome to stay for that. We'll step aside when we come back. More Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Oh, we're back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Just to tease the later part of the program, Brendan Conley, WATD sports reporter. As you hear his reports on our station during the South Shore's Morning News, and he's also a host of, he co-hosts with Bill Wilhelm, the Sports Exchange, Sunday nights, I think 5 to 7. You'll hear him at 7:30. We'll talk all the professional sports. But now, a fun segment that I'm looking forward to. I'm a sci-fi guy, so this tickles my fancy. And I will say also, I just want to say, of our guests who I invited, one of two, Tammy has decided she's going to stay.
Thank you.
You must be a sci-fi buff too, no?
Absolutely.
Okay. You know, I mean, who hasn't seen Men in Black 1, 2, and 3? I have. And so I'm always curious. You hear all, you know, and I watched the show Ancient Aliens. So when I was given the opportunity to speak with our next guest, I'm like, yeah. I'm all over this. And I will tell you, just to kind of give you some background on our guest, Caroline Corey. She is the winner of 7 awards for a film called E.T. Contact. They are here. They are here. Here. They are here. And this is done with some extensive research and history as to whether, in fact, we have extraterrestrial beings here. She's also been, Caroline has been an expert that has been on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, another cool show. And she's also an author and also has websites that we'll talk a little bit about. But it says here in her bio that she's a futurist, a filmmaker, and an international speaker. So joining us, with no further ado, Caroline Corey. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Did I build you up enough, Caroline?
Yes. Awesome. I love it.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. As I said, you're somebody who, you're an author. You're somebody whose expertise is in the extraterrestrial. You did this film that won 7 awards at numerous festivals, film festivals. Tell us a little bit about yourself that maybe I might have overlooked a detail or two.
So, for me, I actually had experiences myself when I was 5 years old. I came in contact with what we call light beings, just kind of a sort of a pulsating light sort of thing, kind of angelic form that I started to communicate with. So that was my first experience, and because of that, it opened me up to, okay, well, what is that? How does it work? And how is it possible that we could be in contact with beings that only certain people can see? Is this for real? Do we make it up? You know, so that kind of started me on a journey. And, you know, throughout my life, I had different types of experiences like that. And so I started to work on consciousness and, you know, the mechanics of consciousness. How does it work? How the human brain could tap into different realities, different dimensions, and things like that. So I started teaching for a long time, for like, you know, 20 years. And, of course, with that, you know, I had more encounters, different types of beings. But also, I met a lot of people who had very similar experiences. And before I knew it, I realized that this is a widespread phenomenon. This is not an isolated thing, you know. There are way too many people having similar experiences. And that's the reason why I decided to make a film. That is how it came about.
How much work went into putting this film together, and also using scientific proof that you were able to gather?
It took about a year to find great stories because, like I said, there are many, many people who have different types of experiences. And for me, this was contact in a wider sense. It wasn't just UFO sightings and extraterrestrials like that we talk about or hear about. It's any sort of non-human entity, any non-human intelligence, whether it be your spirit angel guiding you, or a deceased relative, or some extraterrestrial, you know, that happens to be working with the government, you know, the whole range. And so I wanted to find stories and people who felt credible to me. And so because I wanted this phenomenon to be taken seriously, if you will, or at least, you know, get it, you know, open up some new doors. And so it took about a year to find these folks and also to find the scientists, because I wanted to bring a little bit of science to the table as well, which has never been done before in this context. So I had to find scientists who were open to the idea, but also who were conducting experiments close enough to these types of things that, you know, would fit the topic and what I was trying to do in the film.
Hi, Caroline. This is Tammy. I'm kind of co-hosting, I guess, for this segment with Kevin. But what were the three most interesting revelations in your film, E.T. Contact?
Hey, Tammy.
Hi.
So I think the biggest thing, like I said, it's pretty mind-boggling. Some of the stories are just mind-blowing. I mean, some of the things that are happening, for example, children, most of the time they're government agents, their parents are government agents, and then the children are subject to genetic engineering and things like that. And so the type of evidence that we were able to find was, pretty mind-blowing. So that was one thing in the film that I think is very extraordinary. But also, the actual scientific experiments that we were able to conduct. So what happened was I wanted to validate the contact experience of what happens really physiologically when you come in contact with this non-human entity or an angelic form that is really invisible, but you just sense the presence of this being. And so we set up an experiment on human DNA taken from female placenta, and we measured it, you know, in a lab scientifically. We measured the conductivity and the frequency over and over and over. You know, when you do it scientifically, you have to do it over a period of time. And then we invoked an angelic entity, and we said, you know, we kind of, in a meditative state, try to bring that angelic form, and sure enough, the DNA conductivity shot up like 400%. So that was another mind-blowing discovery that we made also while we're filming, during the filming. So I would say these are the two top ones. Yeah.
So I would ask you, So basically most of your experiences have been through ESP or telepathic, and the individuals who were in the film that you produced and wrote, they also had telepathic experiences, or was there anything where they actually saw or they actually were on board a craft or something?
Yeah, like I said, it was the whole range. And so it was contact in the wider sense. A lot of it was telepathic, where you sense the presence of a being, and then you get this download. I mean, you're hearing things that you know is not coming from you. Mm. So that sort of contact many, many, many people are having, or they start speaking a language they've never heard before, or they have a healing that happens spontaneously. Something does happen on a physiological level in a material way that they know, okay, something did happen. But also we had stories, and even for myself, I had experiences where you see an actual being materialize in your room. So, and others as well who had been on spaceships. So I personally did not have a, like, sort of an abduction type experience, but others did. But many of us did have contact with beings that materialized physically in our presence as well. So it was a whole range. That's why this is really kind of interesting. It's contact in many different ways. But I want to say that most of the time, it's through this telepathic communication. And we know it's real because after the fact, we have something that remains, you know, with us, or that changes us. So that's what we covered in the film.
Again, we're speaking with Caroline Corey, and she is she's an expert when it comes to extraterrestrial beings. She's also produced an award-winning film, won 7 awards, E.T. Contact, They Are Here. And I believe Ben, my producer. Ben, do you have a question?
You know, I do have a quick question, just based on what you're saying. So it sounds like there's more of an emotional response that can be measured, not so much an explanation of an experience that somebody has. It's those actual emotions, whether it be a form of enlightenment, a form of fear, whatever the emotional response is, but that's what really can be measured in some of these experiments. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, actually, yes and no. It is what we were able to measure in the lab on camera, actually, it's the electrical conductivity. So the electricity basically running through the DNA sample that was increased 400% exactly at the time that we invoked this energy. And so it's not necessarily related to a specific emotion. It's just that energy that is flowing through the DNA sample. So that was one thing that we discovered on camera. And another thing was also the frequency. The frequency, so again, you know, when we're filming, as you know, we do this measuring over and over and over a period of time. Then we gather a bunch of data and we do a comparison. But in the film, you have to edit it down, obviously, and we're just kind of going to the bottom line. And the bottom line was, originally, we had specific frequencies in the DNA, and after that contact experience, the frequency had changed. There was a specific type of frequency that wasn't there, that simply appeared. So can we say that those frequencies or those electrical changes are equivalent to an emotional response? They probably are connected to an emotional response, but these are the types of things that we were able to actually measure. Having said that, I know from when people talk about their experiences, every single person would say they felt a very, very strong emotional response as well. So, you know, they felt very expanded or excited or happy, or of course some of them have fear. You know, there's also that factor. And then they say that being was able to comfort me and I was able to let go of the fear and so on and so forth. So there are two different things. But in the film, we measured specific frequencies and electrical changes in the DNA.
Okay. Ben, did you have a quick follow-up or no?
Real quick. So along those same lines, the conversation of metaphysical science, does that play a part in anything at all, any aspect of the experiments and just how you guys are tracking data and how you decide what experiments to run next to see what will react and what won't?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said earlier, these experiments have never been done before. So it's really very new in that sense. However, it still is a scientific experiment in the sense that the conditions were done in the way you would conduct a scientific experiment. So we would do it over and over, measure it over and over and over to make sure we have the specific frequencies and the before and after over a period of time. So we did conduct the experiment scientifically. However, because this is the very first time that we are exploring even that area, I mean, how does a DNA sample, how is it affected by a non-human entity? I mean, it's a completely new territory here. So what happens is that because we had those results, so now we are designing an entire set of experiments based on those results, and we are we're repeating that experiment in different ways over a much longer period of time and seeing if there's any correlation. So, for example, I did that experiment in the film, but what would happen if you did that experiment? Would we get the same result? Or do we invoke another entity? Do we get the same result? So now it's a much bigger experiment that we're working on. And it's very, very exciting, I have to say, because it's brand new territory. So very, very promising, I would say.
Caroline, I think that people are really open to accepting the angelic realm. But what do you say to skeptics and other people who think that UFO phenomenon cannot be possible?
Good question.
I can understand, you know, and for me, the UFO phenomenon is not exactly contact. In other words, it could be, I'm sure it's connected, but it's not necessarily the same. Mm-hmm. So, which means that a lot of people are in ufology are looking at UFOs in the sky. So then it's kind of a little different realm, if you will, because you're talking about what could these anomalies be? Could it be the Air Force doing something that we don't know about? You know what I mean? And I'm kind of looking at it more from a really subjective individual contact experience, what it does to us physiologically, emotionally, on a consciousness level. This type of phenomenon is so widespread. And like you said, it starts with, for me, I know for sure that the angelic realm and the types of being that I used to encounter when I was a child is a lot more common and, like you said, probably more accepted. But then when you open up and you become so sensitive and you see, for example, I could see the aura when I was 5 years old. And so I could see different types of energies and beings that were materializing and dematerializing, let's say, after a while you get confirmation after confirmation after confirmation, and you know, it is the truth. You know, it is the way. But I understand how it may be hard for some people to accept that there may be other types of beings in our earth space. Hopefully with time they'll be more open to it, but it's to me, they're just as real as the angels and our deceased relatives. It's just they just exist, in a spectrum, meaning a frequency range that is not visible to the average person. For example, animals hear certain tones, they see certain things that humans don't. So why is it impossible that not just frequencies, but actually beings and consciousness could exist in that range as well? So hopefully this will help a lot of people be open to the idea.
So is it more or less a dimensional type of a thing where maybe these beings are in a parallel dimension that
yes.
are reaching across and through, and you're able to test as they do this or as they have done this?
Exactly. So, for example, my dog can sense the presence of an angelic form before I do or other people do, because their frequency range is different. I mean, it's higher, and they tap into those other parallel, if you want to call it parallel. But to me, it's a spectrum, so it's like a frequency range. You know, on Earth, we can only perceive one octave of light, but actually, there's 100 octaves of light that we don't see. And so, so in these other octaves, it's kind of like you're moving into a higher frequency range, and there are other things existing in those other frequency ranges. I mean, there's all kinds of beings. So, yeah, it's kind of like a parallel existence. And the way they reach us is they can lower their frequency, their vibrational frequency, to the one that we exist in. So we suddenly see them.
Wow.
And then when they raise that vibration again, suddenly they disappear. But actually, it's all about moving up and down through that whole frequency scale. Does that make sense?
It does, definitely does. Well, I'm a sci-fi guy. So anything you're saying
cool.
to me, it's you know, I want to believe that there's some truth in what folks have created for entertainment may somehow be something that is a reality when it comes to other beings than ourselves or other creatures other than ourselves that we know that are on this planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, it's kind of, I feel like strange that we're still even asking the question. I mean, I think seriously, at this point, are we still wondering with the amount of diversity in, you know, the animal kingdom, the plant life, you know, even just the human species, you know, I mean, do you think it doesn't even make sense that however that creation happened, that, you know, the human species would be it? Like, what, we run out of ideas of how to, you know, make a type of being after we've created the humans were created. So it almost doesn't make sense. And even mathematically, as you know, the Drake equation tells us there must be more than a human species in the universe. I mean, so...
And Caroline, so, do you think it's at all possible that when the human race matures more or evolves more, that it'll open a better dialogue, that, like, maybe some people aren't catching the frequencies all the time, or they're not, the extraterrestrials aren't getting them low enough for people to understand?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I tried to do a little bit in the film, just kind of open the dialogue if possible, just by bringing this you know, introduction to the science of contact. Perhaps so. Hopefully, that people will be more open to the idea, because again, the ESP and the extraterrestrial contact is a very wide range, and some people may be open to the telepathic, you know, ESP type thing before opening up to the idea of, oh, well, there could be other people, other being there too. So I'm hoping, yeah, that people will mature a little bit more and just be open. And I think also the extraterrestrial content, you know, in film business and also what's out there probably on the internet, it's associated sometimes with ufology and the government not telling us the truth and a little bit of conspiracy. So there's a lot of fear, you know, around that. And so I'm sure a lot of people are blocking themselves from that sort of information because, you know, I think there's a lot of fear.
Do you think
makes sense. Yeah.
Do you think there really is an Area 51?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
For sure. There's definitely an Area 51.
You can get close enough to know that it exists, but they'll, you know, tell you you can't get any closer.
Right.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Caroline.
Well, I was just going to say that in my work, because, you know, like I said, I worked on different types of, you know, consciousness expansion and different types of methodology to expand consciousness and also to expand the spectrum, to tap into different dimensions, different realities. So that has been my work. But also part of this is people are maybe familiar, with like remote viewing type thing, exercises. So part of this is to train yourself to expand your perceptual spectrum. And so it's a sort of remote viewing, but a little bit different. And so what we've done many, many times, you know, as I've been teaching so many classes on that, instead of just saying, hey, you know, I believe extraterrestrial exists, or there's this type of angelic form or that one, I would lead the entire class to go somewhere and to explore. Okay, is it true that there is something, some bases on Mars, or on the dark side of the moon, or what is that about? Or so in other words, I've been leading groups as well to tap into these other realities and other dimensions, so people could have a direct experience and direct answers themselves. Part of that as well was the whole Area 51 and all of these kind of topics that people talk about. And so while we did that throughout the years, you know, leading all kinds of different groups from all over the world, we would always come back having about, I want to say between 92% and 98% of the class would have the exact same experience.
We've got less than a minute left in this segment. If folks want to find out more about you or maybe classes that you offer, do you have a website or two that you could share with our listeners?
Sure. So for the film, they can go to et-contact.com, et-contact.com. And for the consciousness work, they can go to carolinecorey.com.
Excellent. I want to say it's been fantastic. I wish we had longer, because I was going to ask you about your stint on the History Channel show, the Ancient Aliens. But maybe next time we'll have you back on.
That'll be great. I just shot a couple of episodes for them for the upcoming season. It's a lot of fun.
Oh boy, spoilers.
Well, all right, so let's try to have you back on then.
That sounds great. I had a great time.
Thank you so much, Caroline.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
You got, there she is, Caroline Corey, award-winning filmmaker, E.T. Contact. They are here. And again, her website is et-contact.com. We're going to say goodbye to Tammy. She says disappears from the segment. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Great to see you.
Get yourself a shamrock shake on the station.
No whipped cream.
And we will step aside. And when we come back, we're going to talk sports here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD. Hey! This is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi.
You are listening to 95.9 WATD, the final segment of Monday Night's Talk. As our listeners, those who listen to this program on a regular basis, know this is more than just a political show. We're not here just to talk about politics. It's more of like a news magazine. So I can go all over the spectrum, whether we want to talk politics, local races, whether we want to talk about an upcoming event, we want to talk with somebody who opened a restaurant, or even delve into pop culture like sports. And joining us on the phone line is our very own Brendan Conley. You can hear Brendan on Sunday nights. You probably heard him last night during the Sports Exchange. He is a co-host on that program. He also is our sports reporter, and he will do various sports reports, not only about the local scores that are going on, whether it's Duxbury, Marshfield, Scituate, you name it, but he also is covering professional sports. Brendan, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Well, it's good to join you, Kevin, as always.
Now, so Brendan would be in studio, but Brendan, being the busy sports reporter he is out and about. And one other hat I forgot to add in there is that Brendan also works for the Boston Herald. So he has some real media clout when it comes to talking about these things. So he's one of the many people that we have had in here, whether it's the Jerry Thorntons, the Kerry Burns, just to name a few who will come in here and talk sports. Well, I thought I would pull our own guy in here, who also, again, has an affiliation with Boston sports and the Boston media with the Herald, to talk about a couple of different things. The first thing I'm going to start off with is one of his reports that he actually did on here, and I actually teased him via a text message when he was reporting on the big trade that happened last weekend, where there was actually a flurry of trades that the Bruins made prior to the NHL trade deadline. One of those big moves happened to be Rick Nash. Give me your thoughts on some of the moves that the Bruins made, and how do you feel that it's going to help them moving forward?
Well, it seems like they're all in at this point. I think by trading for Rick Nash, the Bruins sent a signal to us all that they think that at this time of the year, they're ready to go, and they want to make a cup run. Rick Nash, obviously being a six-time NHL All-Star, if I'm correct there, he's one of the stars of the league. He may be up there in age at 33, but the Bruins wanted to make a move, and they wanted to throw all their chips in, and he looks like he's ready to deliver for this team. He scored the other night against, if I recall, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to be ready to go.
Well, here's the thing is it's the tale of two Nashes, Riley and you know, it's Rick, you know, being on the same team. I want to say that they both of the Nashes, two different lines, actually scored during the said game that you're mentioning against, I think it's Carolina. Yeah, against the Hurricanes, yeah.
If that line works out with Krejci and that line you were mentioning, I think we could be in for a good run with the Bruins. Other moves they made were Tommy Wingles, who actually walked by me during practice while everyone else was at the rink. He ended up scoring as well during that night. It seemed like they wanted to address their depth needs, you know, and they did just that. And now with Patrice Bergeron going down with a fracture in his foot, yep, I think the Bruins are ready to make sure they're safe going forward.
Do you feel, as a reporter, as somebody who's a sports prognosticator who sits and kind of judges these things during the sports show that you do, that they overpaid to get Rick Nash? Because he's merely a rental. This is a guy who's pulling close to $8 million annually, and I don't foresee him, if there was to be a new contract, and if he was to consider staying with the Bruins, that he would want anything less than top dollar.
Well, the question is, how far do they go? They obviously gave up a lot to get him from New York, but in the next few months, what will this team do? If they get eliminated in the first round and he leaves, of course it's a overpay. But if they make a run at the Cup and end up making some moves and, you know, shocking the rest of the world, yeah, I mean, it's worth it, I think. Depends on what they do. That's all that matters at this point.
And they also traded for defensemen. Now, not necessarily the defensemen that most were hoping for from the New York Rangers. It seemed we got the lesser of the two. And the individual that they, was it Nick Holden that they traded for?
That is true at this point. The problem with the Nick Holden deal, in my eyes, is just they already had seven other defensemen to deal with. So question is, what are they going to use Nick Holden for? Are they going to use him a lot? Are they going to throw him out there? They gave up Rob O'Gara and a pick to get him. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just a question of depth at this point, I think, with the Holden deal.
You look at the Nash deal, though. My qualm is, I feel like they gave up a lot. I was okay with trading away Ryan Spooner. Spooner was going to be a restricted free agent at the end of the year. I had no problem with trading a defenseman that, you know, that's, you know, I don't know if he is in their system somewhere, and then giving
up, and
let's not forget Matt Bolesky too, right? Correct, Bolesky, who was I hated the signing when they signed him as a free agent. So getting rid of that contract was okay in my book, but I would say here's the thing: giving up a first round pick this coming year's first round pick, I thought it was a bit much, and I think there's also a seventh rounder in there too.
Well, there was a lot in there.
One guy.
I think the picks were the main give up in that deal.
Yep.
And the only question I have is exactly what I just mentioned earlier, though. How far will the Bees go? If they end up making a run at the Cup, like I said, this deal will work out for them. But if not, then it's going to be marked as a failure.
Sure.
We'll see how it goes.
My fear is, here's the one thing that I'm not worried about many of the teams in their conference. The one team that they seem to struggle with, that they cannot beat, is Washington.
Shocker. I mean, they always Washington always gives the Bees problems.
Yep.
It's just one thing they can't seem to get overcome. And the team I'm actually fearful of because of a move they've made is Tampa Bay.
Right.
Tampa Bay is
they got McDonough.
Exactly. They got Ryan McDonough. They have they're just probably the most talented team in the whole entire Eastern Conference now. It's not even a question now. The question, like, they traded a ton to get him, but at the same time, Tampa Bay is stacked now. That's the team I'd worry about at this point.
Well, so let's play. You could be the sports Nostradamus for our radio station, being that you are the sports guy. How far
okay, I'll try my best.
if you were just to go with gut instinct, how far does this Bruins team go all the way to the Cup Finals, or do they stall out somewhere second or third round?
Well, obviously my gut is telling me that they're probably going to go probably 1 to 2 rounds. That's just my gut feeling, but obviously I'm hoping that they go all the way.
Okay. Well, it depends. Here's the thing. It depends on Tuukka Rask. It depends
That's
on...
a huge key.
He's a huge key. Let's not forget in 2009, 2010, that he petered out. He just to Philadelphia. And, you know, it wasn't his fault, but, you know, he was the guy between the pipes at the time because we lost Timmy Thomas.
Well, that's another thing. Tuukka's been having a great year. He
started out, he had a crappy
time with Khudobin. Cassidy sat him,
yeah.
And if you recall, only like a month or two into the season.
But did you, what was his record? You looked at his record and look what his goals against average was, and it was horrific. If it wasn't for sitting him and saying,
terrible.
"Hey, you got to earn it. You got to earn it, Tuukka." I think that helped because he has been on a tremendous run.
Well, it certainly sparked him. That it seems yep. We can all say that at yep. this point, because ever since he's looked dominant. And the question is, what's his stamina? How is it going to
sure.
hold up in the playoffs once
sure.
we get there? He has proven that he is one of the NHL's best goalies when it comes to crunch time. But the question is, when it comes to the playoffs, what's he going to do there?
Right.
If he is able to keep it together and the Bruins continue to split time with Khudobin, I think they might actually be in good shape. But question is, how far can they ride him?
It's an excellent question. Last question I'll ask you regarding the Bruins is, who is your favorite babyface newcomer that we have seen that has injected life into this team and kind of given them a different identity?
Well, if you're talking about who they've had on their roster the whole time, I'd say Charlie McAvoy. The guy looks like a stud. I mean, it's safe and easy pick, of course.
Oh, my God. And here's the thing.
Won the game the other night.
Yes, I was going to just say that. It's like this kid is just, he is exuding, he has such confidence in himself. Seeing him when he was skating in overtime with a puck on his stick, and he's done it a couple of times when he, you know, when you had it was one or two shootouts that he had the winning goal, and it just seems as though he can't get enough of it.
Well, somebody actually told me that they didn't think he was going to pan out. I told them they were nuts because the talent he had was incredible. Yeah. And the past few games, why don't I just say it, the whole season, he has been incredible. Just one of the best defensemen out there. And he is certainly an up-and-comer, that's for sure. I just love his performance so far.
I was going to say, it was a gamble that the Bruins took last year in the playoffs where they burned a year of his eligibility.
His eligibility. It was a big risk,
but I think it paid off.
Yeah, it seems like now that he's actually gotten some seasoning, he's ready to go, and I'd love to see how he does this year in the playoffs if he's been accustomed to that stress. Sure.
Well, here's the thing, though. He has had some rookie mistakes. I mean, I shouldn't say that questionable goal, that controversial goal against Toronto that basically gave Toronto the game when Charlie kind of got bumped off the spot into Tuca. And Tuca couldn't get back in time to be able to, you know, stop that fourth goal. That was kind of, he couldn't hold his position and be able to get that guy, clear that guy out from in front of Tuca.
Yeah, I mean, it, we're all going to see rookie mistakes with some players like that.
Yeah, it's expected.
He's still growing as a player, you know. He'll overcome most of those problems, though, eventually. And we're just hoping that it happens sooner rather than later.
Again, we are speaking with WATD sports guy, Brendan Conley, who is joining us. Brendan, of course, co-hosting the Sports Exchange that you hear on Sunday nights. And he also writes to the Boston Herald. And we're talking some professional sports here because that's what he does. He attends these press conferences. And let's go away from the Bruins. Let's talk a little Celtics. Celtics rejuvenated after the All-Star break, also the addition back from injury, Marcus Smart. Team's playing a little different. Give me your thoughts on the Celtics and how things are going for them.
Well, the other flavor of the month, of course, they have been doing their thing lately. Yep. The question is Gordon Hayward coming back? Because that's the only question I have. We talked about this earlier in the season. I was like, oh, they're going to win 60 games. I was that excited about them. But ever since their little cold streak before the All-Star break, right, they've been on a roll. I think the addition of Marcus Smart coming off that hand injury has really helped them out in terms of defense, and it's really given them a spark that they had been missing for a while.
Yeah, they were getting their tails kicked prior to the couple of games leading into the All-Star break, and folks were like, you would see stuff, especially on Twitter. You know, you can't get away with stuff on Twitter without, you know, the trolls coming out and calling you out on it.
Drop to the fourth seed.
And it's fodder for the two big sports talkers in Boston, the Boston area, where they're going, what's wrong with this team? How come the Celtics, they make a big trade instead of, you know, signing a free agent,
Greg Monroe,
who, you know, is starting to find a role. He's kind of, you know, he's more that bench guy at the moment. Do you feel that they're going to have enough? Because there's also a difference in tempo, where it was kind of their pacing as to the games. The first half is going to be somewhat different in the second half.
Well, it seemed like their problem in the first half was falling behind every single game, and then they'd have to fight their way back.
Right.
Then they actually started losing games, and that's what caused the media to go into a question. I think the real thing that sparks everyone is what's Cleveland doing. Is if Cleveland continues to struggle, which we saw most of the first half while Isaiah Thomas was there,
yep.
then I will see the media back off. But over the course of the past few games, though, it looks like they're back to their normal selves. They put up 134 points the other night, and that's quite a lot, if you recall. And that was all in regulation,
right?
What I think about this Celtics team is I think they'll figure things out as we go down the stretch. But in the meantime, we have to see what's going on with Cleveland, what's going on with Toronto, and once those things play out, we'll see everyone cool off.
Okay. Let's transition from the Celtics, because we've just got a little bit of time left here before we close out the program. And again, speaking with Brendan Conley, our sports guy here, WATD. Yeah, it's been quite the hangover for the New England Patriots since the end of the season, since losing the Super Bowl. All the questions.
Really?
All the questions about Malcolm Butler. Why wasn't he in there? Was he on punishment? What's going on to now where the latest thing is Rob Gronkowski. Is Rob Gronkowski the next WWE superstar, or is he going to be somebody waiting in the wings for the new XFL, or is he going to be in Expendables 4 with Sly Stallone?
Well, he's certainly given fans a little pause by tweeting the past few times, which we're not used to seeing from Gronk. Like he was posting stuff that he pulled out of a fortune cookie last week. But then Ian Rappaport, former Boston Herald writer himself,
yep.
Now turned NFL Network employee, reported that it looks like Gronk is going to just consider all that stuff after his career. He didn't really give a timetable of when that career will end, but it seems like he is, at this point, going to work with the Patriots or with the NFL, at least, until said time happens.
Well, Tom E. Curran was also another one who actually, prior to Ian's report, not Rappaport, but his report on the Gronk situation, Curran, days prior to that, had made the astonishing revelation that Gronkowski has been pondering for the past year that, you know, the training camp had a lot to do with it, and that during the 2017 season, he did not have a good time, because Gronk is about a good time. I mean, why else would he have a party bus?
Well, that's what really, I think, shook the media, was when Tommy Curran actually breaks something about the Patriots and it's not positive. That's when you know something's wrong. But once I trust Ian Rappaport's reporting, no pun intended on this one. He's been at this for a long time. Tom E. Curran is one of the best when it comes to the local media here, and I believe it. I mean, it seemed like a stressful year for the Patriots going forward over the course of the past few months.
Yep.
But I think now that Gronk has had time to settle down and think about his what he wants to do and how he wants his career to pan out, I think he's probably at this point looking at at another season or two with the Pats.
How the world turns over at Gillette Stadium. Any fears? I know you're somebody who follows what the Patriots do. You're over there for the press conferences. You're in the guys' lockers getting interviews. Any concerns that you got a lot of key free agents? You got Danny Amendola is up as a free agent. Nate Solder. You got Malcolm Butler, who's going to walk away. Now, Malcolm didn't have a great season, but I still see him as being a top free agent. I see him being a top corner in this league, and I think the idea that, you know, Stephen Gilmore got that big contract that he was seeking, I think that really affected him.
I mean, you had to know it did. Looking at his performance over the past year, what ended up happening in the Super Bowl, you know, Malcolm Butler probably was, you know, he was probably upset with the whole thing. And now that he's a free agent, I could see him going anywhere. I heard a rumor that the Jets were already looking at him.
Yep.
So he could end up in the AFC East again. As for the others, I think the Patriots will do their best to keep the guys that are most necessary in their offense. Whoever is, like Danny Amendola, for instance. They need depth pieces, of course. We don't know what Edelman's going to do when he comes back from that ACL tear. We don't know what Gronk's going to do when he comes back. We need to make, the Patriots need to make sure that they're safe on that end. As for defense, I think we can look to see them add either through the draft or at free agency at this point.
Yeah, you need line. Well, you need linebacking help. You need defensive help, not only on the defensive line where they got pushed all over the place and couldn't stop the run, whether you had Alan Branch in there on the D-line or not, they got ran on. So you need not only defensive line, but you also need a mobile linebacker who's not going to avoid getting avoid the tackle, or somebody who can at least, I think, cover sideline to sideline. You know what I mean?
Of course. And the other thing we have totally glossed over is the backup quarterback. They got Brian Hoyer in right now as their backup. So I think the Patriots, with Brady being almost 41 now, have to look at their next plan of action. They traded away their next plan of action midway through the season with Jimmy Garoppolo, and Lord knows how many backstories there are to that one. But there's going to be quite a few quarterbacks in this upcoming draft. I don't know where they'll decide to pick their man, but I think they're going to make a tackle at that one, whether it be first or second round draft.
Okay. Again, you are listening to 95.9 WATD, Monday Night Talk, right up until 8 o'clock, and Brendan Conley is my guest. And the final topic that we will discuss and pore over is the Boston Red Sox. Not many people know that you are a baseball fanatic. Is that correct?
You could say that. I don't consider myself Carrabba's, Jared Carrabba's, who's come on my program, but I'm certainly a big fan myself.
Whoa. Stop. Did you just try to name drop on my show?
My apologies.
You did not do that. Go ahead.
Okay, well,
God, I'm having fun with you.
It was a Jerry Thornton-esque thing. Like, your guy is Jerry Thornton. Carrabba's is my guy.
Oh, yeah, but you see, here's what you need to do. You need to bait the hook. And you and I need to have Carrabba's on this show.
Yeah. I mean, I could certainly see what I can do there.
Okay, all right.
Pull a few strings.
All right. Well, it's been interesting. Here we are. We're talking. It's right now. You got spring training. It's ongoing. Give me your thoughts. I want to say a lot has happened during the offseason, but it really didn't.
And, not in the Red Sox end of things. I mean, the Yankees certainly made their move of trading for Giancarlo Stanton, being obviously the biggest one of the entire offseason. But the Red Sox, until about last week, coincidentally,
Alex Cora
didn't do anything.
Alex Cora, that was it.
That was it, until about a couple days ago or so.
Yep.
And then they did the move that everyone was expecting way earlier in the offseason, and they signed J.D. Martinez at a much lower rate than everyone expected.
Right.
I think it was a win for the Sox in this case, because if you recall, right when the season ended, Martinez was commanding a 7-year contract worth about $220 million or so.
Yeah, but wait, hold on. Who is his agent?
You could probably guess that by judging who I'm talking about here, but of course, it's Scott Boras.
Right. Scott Boras is the guy who, he sets the market. He puts it out there, and he sets the bar high and realizes that, you know what, that he's got all that ceiling to play with. Sometimes he's able to break through the ceiling. Other times he wants to get up near it. He didn't so much. It was an off year for free agents. There was a lot of complaining that teams were really holding the line when it came to signing free agents and throwing money around, that there's more teams. You know, there was a time a couple of years ago that there were a handful of teams you knew were going to open the checkbook up regardless of any luxury tax that they had to incur. But you see, in the Yankees, they've had payrolls exceeding $200, $300 million, pulling back a little bit. Not necessarily. You look at the Los Angeles Angels, another team, the Dodgers. All of
the Red Sox.
The Red Sox.
That went without a couple of big market teams.
That went without saying. But the idea here is that you have teams that are actually that are kind of being frugal, and that's good. You don't want this thing to get out of hand. We are already seeing contracts that, you know, players are making anywhere between $20 and $35 million per year. A lot of
and
money.
Then we see next year, Bryce Harper is reportedly seeking like $400-500 million contract. It's getting out of hand, so teams are starting to catch wind of it and just trying to put their foot down before it gets out of control.
Market adjustment. That's what's happening. It's a little bit of a market adjustment to just kind of bring things, sync things up. We just got a couple of minutes left here. What do you like about this Martinez signing? And how do you, looking at spring training and how things are going under Alex Cora, the new manager, what do you foresee?
Well, so far they've looked great in spring training. Alex Cora seems to be doing a great job. As for the signing, though, I think the Red Sox had a win in this deal. Question is, because my question, at least going into it, was, what are they going to sign this guy for? And is it going to be a Carl Crawford deal? Is it going to be another
crazy
out-of-control free agent signing? And that leads nowhere. But it seems like a great deal on their end of things.
Right.
So,
and there's opt-out.
If he pans out and hits 30 to 40 home runs, then yes, it's definitely a win in my opinion.
If folks want to find out more of some of the stuff that you're working on, what's some of the social media platforms that folks can access you or be able to see some of your fine work?
So they can check me out on Twitter at BCONN63, BCONN63, or they can obviously follow us here at 95.9 FM, WATD, or at the Boston Herald. I post stuff on a regular basis, whether it be through retweets or reporting of my own, and you can find us anywhere there.
Excellent. I want to thank you very much, Brendan. Again, knowing that you're a busy guy, next time we'll try to get you in studio. Maybe you can, if you want to have Carabas join us or any of the other Muckety Mucks. It would be a nice one. Maybe Mikey Riley, you know? Have him in and maybe we'll talk a little WrestleMania.
Of course. He's a big wrestling guy.
I love
him on Facebook and Twitter.
Mikey is the best.
He's a great guy. Former Rocks announcer, if I'm correct.
That's right. Yeah, PA guy. Yep, absolutely. Well, there he is. Brendan Conley has been our guest. And thank you very much for keeping the radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. We've got more great programming coming up, so stay tuned for that. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., that's it for us. Have yourself a great evening.